The hour 10:15 having arrived, we'll call the House Tax Committee to order Thursday, March 6, 2025. Representative Herr, would you please move the minutes of March 5th? Please. Would you please move the minutes for?
Mr. Chair, I have reviewed the minutes and I move the minutes.
Thank you so much. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all fair say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, we have a full agenda and we have things going externally that some members will want to be taking part of also, so we'll try to work with that. We have the order of House File 1066 Ryer, House File 1126 Spencer Murra, then House File 967 Davids and 1669 Davids. So we'll just go in that order. We want to have 1669 last because some of the members would like to hear some of that testimony and comment on that. Thank you, members, for the day yesterday. I thought we accomplished a lot yesterday. And so we'll move forward. It's a beautiful day. I'm feeling really good, very positive, but I haven't looked at the budget forecast yet. So we'll see what happens there. So with that, a few comments. Chair Gomez.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. So as the chair alluded to, a few of us will be going to a briefing on the budget forecast in a couple minutes. But I just wanted to say that we have the Chairman DeChamp from Grand Portage and Secretary Treasurer Finde here to testify on House File 1126 and House File 967. And so I just wanted to welcome them. It's for us as elected officials. It's an honor to welcome our fellow elected officials from our tribal nations to our committee. And Mr. Chair, I just think we've done a lot of valuable work together, the legislature and the elected leadership of the sovereign tribes in Minnesota. And we have, especially in the tax area, and we're happy to have done that work and will continue to because our partnership's ongoing. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for just allowing me to welcome our guests, and my apologies that we'll be leaving. It's not because we don't want to talk about your bills or hear from you, I promise. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. This is, we've got a lot of stuff going on here today, so do what you have to do, and we'll make it work from there. And welcome to you. We're glad you're here today. So that being said, and I think I pronounced somebody's name wrong. I think I said Spencer Murra. Sorry. Spencer, correct? Censor. Okay. You know, I hate it when names are spelled wrong. You know, people say, Greg, how do you spell it? Are there one G or two? And I say, well, there's two. So then they go G-R-E-G-G. Well, then there's three, right? So I apologize to you. I wanted to get the names right here. Okay. With that, I will move House File 1066, a Ryer bill. Please present the bill. Are there any amendments on that one? Okay. We have one or?
Just one. The A1.
Okay, this is one that moves the funding from 20 million to 10 million, doesn't it?
22 million.
Oh, 22 million. Oh, okay. Gotta get my glasses cleaned here. Okay, so that being said, so this is the author amendment?
That's right, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I will move the 66A1 author's amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author would like. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? He just barely made it. That passes. The amendment is we have the bill in the shape the author would like. Let's hear from the author.
Thank you, Chair.
Recording
Gates.
In progress.
Chair, it sounded a little bit like Halloween music or something.
That was interesting. Are we good? Okay. To the bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Thank you, committee members. I'm glad to be here to talk about House File 1066, the Soil and Water Conservation District Funding Bill. Thanks also to the many members who have on both sides of the aisle who have been signing on in recent days. There are too many to name, but I appreciate your support, and I know the SWCDs do as well. SWCDs are very special parts of our communities. Dating back nearly 90 years, they're a trusted resource to help preserve soil and water quality in our lands, lakes, and rivers. Farmers rely on them. Homeowners do too. As elected officials, the SWCD supervisors are accountable for a wide range of statutory duties. However, unlike many other elected bodies, SWCDs do not have levy authority. We're in an unstable time right now. We're hearing about our updated state financial forecast today. And the situation, local economic implications from federal changes are unclear. In this environment, SWCDs provide a valuable and cost-effective piece of stability. Funding them at the level requested will allow them to maintain their staffing, providing good jobs for local people, and solving local problems before they get out of hand. Now to this bill. As amended, it eliminates the reduction in funding that is scheduled to occur, which would drop the annual investment from $15 million to $12 million. Instead, it builds on the general fund appropriation from 2022, increasing the funding to $22 million per year. The $22 million came from a bottom-up assessment of the funding needed for all SWCDs to deliver on their mission of conservation implementation with private landowners. Each SWCD provided their data into a benchmark analysis, and I think it's important to set them up to succeed. In closing, I'd like to thank the Soil and Water Conservation Districts across the state for your work, including, of course, my own Dakota County SWCD. Now I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Sheila Vanney for her testimony.
Thank you. Please state your name and who represents the record, please.
Good morning, Chair Davids and members. Sheila Vanney, I'm the Assistant Director for the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. We represent the 440 elected SWCD supervisors across the state, as well as their conservation staff. I want to thank you for the opportunity to present this bill today and, of course, for Representative Ryer for carrying it. Soil and Water Conservation District aid has provided really a game changer for how SWCDs are funded from the state. This is critical for us to accomplish our mission in working with private landowners on water quality and soil health efforts. And Mr. Chair, I would just point, reference everyone's copy of this handout they should have gotten. I think it provides a really great visual of the wide spectrum of services that SWCDs are working with private landowners on. So you'll see lakeshore stabilization projects, cover crop seed mix expertise, working with livestock owners on nutrient management guidance, monitoring our lake and our lake water quality, working with urban residents on projects like rain gardens to help infiltrate water on the urban landscape, as well as providing agricultural producers with guidance on irrigation management so that they're not using more water than their crops need. So this is just a small slice of the work that SWCDs do across the state on a voluntary basis with willing landowners who have the shared objective of stewardship for our land and water resources. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for Ms. Vanney? Okay, thank you very much. To the author, any questions for the author from members? Is there anyone in the audience wishes to testify for the bill or with concerns? Would the department like to weigh in? I thought the commissioner came for this one. Okay. So with that, what we will do is, first of all, I'd like to thank you, Representative Ryer, for carrying this bill. It's a good bill. Our soil and water conservation districts do wonderful work. And you said two words, your testifier did, that it is voluntary with willing landowners. To me, that's a big deal. So thank you for the bill. With that, I will move that House File 1066 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Item next, we'll go to Censor Mura, House File 1126. And if you have any witnesses with you.
I have one non-speaking.
Okay. Oh, they might be speaking. We don't know that yet.
And I did bring treats. I brought a baby and treats, so hopefully.
Oh, this looks like a very good bill to me. So welcome to the committee. I will move House File 1126. Are there any amendments on 1126?
No.
Okay, no amendments, so we'll take the bill straight up. A two-year bill, Representative.
Thank you, Chair David and committee members. My bill, HF1126, seeks to establish a property tax exemption for the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe's Twin City office, which is located in my district of Minneapolis in the Seward neighborhood. The Twin Cities office is a key location to serve the approximately 1,600 Leech Lake Band members who reside in the greater metro area and also the larger Twin Cities urban native community. The property is owned and staffed by the Leech Lake Band and offers a physical location that is much closer than the 200-plus mile drive to the Leech Lake government offices in Cass Lake. Indeed, while many of those served at the Twin Cities offices are my constituents, many also come to the office from the greater metro area to access services ranging from elder programming, vaccine clinics, child welfare assistance, and a host of community gatherings and celebrations. Today, I have Leech Lake Band Secretary Treasurer Leonard Findey with me and can share more about the community services that are offered there and answer any questions. Just want to also note that this bill was heard last year in the Tax Committee and had support at that time from both bodies and both sides of the aisle. So hope you will support the bill again and would love to turn it over to my testifier.
Please state your name and who represents for the record, please, sir.
Yes, thank you, Chair Davids and committee members. My name is Lenny Findey. I have the honor to serve as Secretary Treasurer of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today and support a House File 1126. We're also thankful for the partnership and relationship we have with Representative Censor Murra, as she is the representative who represents our Twin Cities office in the legislature. This bill would authorize a property tax exemption that would apply to the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe Twin Cities office, which is located at 2438 27th Avenue South in the Seward neighborhood of Minneapolis. The building is operated by the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe government and provides programs and services offered by the tribal government to Leech Lake citizens in the Twin Cities metro area. The tribal government programs provided at the Leech Lake Twin Cities office include permanent space for our child welfare program, legal department, tribal assistance program, and elder advocates. The Twin Cities office also offers community members access to faxing, copying, phones, computers, notary public services, and access to our monthly tribal newspaper, the Debajimon. Administrative staff are on site to update personal contact information as well. In addition to these programs and services that are available on a daily basis, the Leech Lake Twin Cities office also hosts many community events and provides a location for on-reservation programs to provide services to our urban members as needed. The Twin Cities office hosts community gatherings, vaccination clinics, expungement clinics, tribal council quarterly meetings, and Toys for Tots drives, just to name a few. When Leech Lake acquired the property in 2019, we had a tenant occupying part of the building under an existing lease. This lease recently expired. As we explored options for the space being vacated by the tenant, we discovered that the property tax assessments would be a substantial burden for occupying the entire building with our government programs. Without a tenant to offset a portion of the tax obligation, the cost to Leech Lake to operate the building exclusively for government purposes would increase substantially. Currently, property taxes represent two-thirds of the anticipated building operating costs for the current year. The result is increased costs in delivering critical and important government services for our urban citizens that is around triple what we would be paying without property taxes. The services offered by the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe at the Twin Cities office are the same as those offered by other governments that benefit from exempt property tax status. As the members of this committee know, one of the unavoidable costs of conducting government business is office space and the property needed for that office space. Tripling the cost for office space reduces the quality and quantity of services that governments are able to provide. In order to expand the government services available to Leech Lake members through our Twin Cities office, it's necessary to limit these costs as much as possible. The Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe is dedicated to maintaining existing programs and services available to urban band citizens and intends to increase and improve community services. Gaining the ability to qualify for the tax exemption based on the operation of these programs and services at our Twin Cities office would enhance the ability to pursue this intent. On behalf of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, I want to thank you for the thank the committee members for their time and consideration of House File 1126 and for the opportunity to provide testimony I'm happy to answer any questions. I also want to note that our Leech Lake General Counsel, Christopher Murray, is here as well and will be happy to answer any questions. And as Representative Censor Murrah stated, this was a bill that had some bipartisan support last year, bicameral support last year, didn't make it into the final omnibus bill, but we're hoping that it will this year. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from committee members of the witness or testifier? Anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for the bill with concerns about the bill? Would the department like to testify? Okay, you're good. Okay. Okay, so so any questions for the author from committee members? Okay. Any wrap, you want to wrap it up there, Representative? Yeah.
Thank you, Chair and committee members, for the time to share about this important work. You know, I think as Lead Gomez said before she left, this is really about government-to-government relations with our tribes, and so would ask for your support for this bill. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I'll renew my motion that House File 1126 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you. Item next. House File 967. And I will just take it from here. Okay, I will move House File 967. I don't see any amendments. And I believe we have a testifier, Reed LeBeau, here. So I will be moving House File 967 later for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. LeBeau, but I think this is somewhat similar to the one we just heard here.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so the testifier for this bill is Mr. Reed LeBeau. If you'd please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Reed LeBeau, and I'm the lawyer and lobbyist for the Grand Portage Band of Ojibwe. As you just mentioned, Mr. Chairman, this is a provision that was considered last year. It enjoyed bipartisan, bicameral support. This law change is necessary because the Cook County Board actually brought this to the attention of the band. There are seven parcels of fee land that are owned by the band in Cook County that are off the reservation, and the county simply didn't want to assess property taxes on those parcels, but the only way to accomplish that is by having this law change and exempting those parcels from state property tax.
Okay, that's pretty straightforward. Does this have anything to do with some property in Hennepin County also?
No, Mr. Chairman.
This one doesn't. That's the last one.
Okay. That was the last one.
Gotcha. Okay, any questions for members for the testifier, Mr. LeBeau? Anyone in the audience like to testify for this one with concerns? Okay, member question. Any member questions? If not, I'll renew my motion that House File 967 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Mr. LeBeau.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members.
Just one more bill, 5 minutes, we should have her. or something like that. Okay, this bill is the David's bill. This is one I'm very excited about in that this could really be kind of a turning point for some of our agriculture producers and the energy industry in the state of Minnesota. So, I will move House File 1669. Let's see if there's any amendments to get in the shape I want it. How many are there? Okay. Okay, members, I'll move House File 1669, and it'll be not to go anywhere, but to be for possible inclusion. And we have an amendment, the H1669DE1 amendment, which basically aligns this closer to, well, with what the governor's proposal is. So we'll try and get it in sync right away. And for this, Cynthia, well, let's get the, well, should we do the amendment first or the numbers? Let's do the numbers first. Yeah, Ms. Templin, could you please, from the bill that I have here, with the amendment, how does that change?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, before you should have a revenue estimate for House File 1669 with the DE1 amendment, and you can see the amendment does increase the allocations available to, for the SAF fuel credit. The fiscal impact to the general fund is $10.6 million in fiscal 27 and $2.1 million in 28 and 29.
Okay, thank you. So I will now move the H1669DE1 amendment. Any further discussion for members? This gets the bill in the shape the author would like. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. So now we have the bill before us as amended. And so what I think we'll do maybe is have House Research kind of describe what the bill does as amended. So we're on the same page here, and then we'll go into, we got quite a few folks want to testify, so we'll go into testimony. Mr. Klayman.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 1669 as amended would modify the state's existing sustainable aviation fuel credit by increasing the dollar amount of credits that is available for allocation for fiscal years 26 and 27. By providing for a supplemental credit increase under certain conditions. The bill would also clarify how the current rollover system should work, and also the bill would extend the sunset on the existing credit from tax year 2031 until tax year 2036.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Klayman. So what we'll do now is we'll start with testimony on the bill. At the top of our list and at the top of our hearts, Commissioner Paul Marquardt. How are the Cubs going to do versus the Cardinals this year? Cubs all the way.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Marquardt, Commissioner of the Department of Revenue, and you know, I was a big Cardinals fan back in the 60s, yes. And Lou Brock and Kurt Flood and Bob Gibson and all of those. So.
Yeah, Bob Gibson, yeah.
And I won't remind you of what happened to the 1969 Cubs when they were way up in August. And
the Miracle Mets. Yep. That was a rough time for me. Yes. Okay, to the bill, Commissioner. Welcome to the committee. We're glad you're here.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you so much for bringing forward House File 1669 as amended. I also want to thank all the bipartisan authors. And I know, Mr. Chair, you're going to be very happy to hear this. Governor Walz, Lieutenant Governor Flanagan supports House File 1669 as amended, and certainly matches the language that the governor has in his budget for this year.
Commissioner, I might need to check with Joanna Bears on that.
So
thumbs up, she, okay.
No, this, and I'm, Mr. Chair, I'm going to be short because I know you have a number of testifiers, but this is really a win-win. It's a win in that it's going to, sustainable aviation fuels is going to create cleaner aviation fuels, and it's going to produce jobs and better the economy in Minnesota. So that is huge. And because of the 2023 legislation and the work of the Minnesota SAF Hub, late in October, DG Fuels announced a $5 billion manufacturing facility in the city of Moorhead in Clay County that will create about 650...
Mr. Commissioner, where was that?
Mr. Chair, that happens to be in the city of Moorhead, Clay County. So,
good district. Okay.
So create those jobs, but also looking to produce about 193 million gallons of sustainable aviation fuels, which would be about half of the entire fuel that's used out at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. So, it is significant, and your bill and the expansion here. Is going to go a long ways in keeping up this momentum in making Minnesota a huge leader in SAF production. And again, the governor, Lieutenant Governor, strongly supports this. I also want to mention that the Department of Agriculture is here, and I think because they were also in the Senate with the same language, they're here for questions, but also supports this language here. So again, thank you for what you're doing here for SAF. It's very much appreciated.
Thank you, Commissioner Marquardt. Any questions from members for the commissioner? Okay, thank you very much. Really appreciate your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next on my list, I have Mr. Jeff Davidman, Vice President of State and Local Government, Delta Airlines. So before you get started, I have to tell a little story. I have a niece. She was 3 years old, almost four, and her mother is originally from Germany, so they go back and forth once or twice a year. And she says, Uncle Greg, I'm a great uncle, but Uncle Greg, I hate Delta Airlines. And I said, why, Hazel, why do you hate Delta Airlines? They take far too long to get to Amsterdam. And I said, oh, okay. And she says, I don't like, what's the one they go from?
Lufthansa.
Whatever airline. She said, I don't like them either. I said, why don't you like that airline? They don't have TVs on the flight into Frankfurt. I'm going, a three-year-old? I thought it was pretty, well, we love Delta Airlines, just so you know. To the bill, Mr. Davidman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Jeff Davidman with Delta Airlines. And as I get started on my testimony about SAF, I have to acknowledge that actually seeing Officer Crambier here working the door and protecting us all today. He was on a recent tour of a SAF facility. I've got great photos if anybody needs incriminating photos of Officer Crambier as he toured the refinery with us in the Netherlands, in Amsterdam, actually. So
I always say, if you ain't Dutch, you ain't much.
That's right. But thanks again for the opportunity to be here today. I'm here to testify in strong support of House File 1669. I want to thank Chair Davids for authoring this legislation and the strong bipartisan co-authors on this bill as well. It's greatly appreciated. Aviation is a hard to decarbonize industry, and unlike other forms of transportation, there aren't any electric planes that are expected that would be able to fly from Minneapolis to Chicago or New York or London or anywhere in the world for the next 70 years. But Delta's made a commitment to get to net zero by 2050, and although there are things that we can do on the ground, 90% of our carbon footprint occurs what's in the air. And the best tool that the airline industry has to reach the goal of getting to net zero is sustainable aviation fuel. In fact, we think it's about 60 to 70% of that solution. And that's not just Delta saying that, but if you look around the world, whether it's the U.S. 2021 Aviation Climate Plan or the International Civil Aviation Organization, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or just countries around the world like the UK, Singapore, South Korea, Japan, India, Australia, the EU, they're all looking at SAF policies to solve that climate challenge. But in addition to the climate challenge, SAF also provides significant opportunities to enhance our country's energy independence and spur significant economic development opportunities throughout Minnesota, which other testifiers will talk about today. You're going to see the entire value chain here today talking about those opportunities. From a Delta Airlines standpoint, we're the end consumer. So here to talk about, there is a purchaser at the end of the day that wants to purchase SAF if we can scale it. So what is SAF? In order for a fuel to be classified as SAF under Minnesota law, it has to have a minimum of a 50% reduction in the carbon emissions over the life cycle of the fuel when compared to conventional jet fuel. And we know that some feedstocks can result up to an 80% reduction. And in the amendment that you just adopted, the bill changes the law so that the better the CI score, the better the reduction, the better the tax credit. SAF's a drop-in fuel, and so based on current technology, today we can take 50% SAF and we can blend it with 50% conventional jet fuel, and it works in our plane. So it's ASTM certified, it's FAA certified. We're flying in using it on our planes today. We used about 12 million gallons last year. Our aircrafts don't see the difference, our engines don't see the difference, and all the infrastructure we have at the airport works. So the fuel farm, all the way to the plane and into our plane, it works today. And the expectation is, as we continue to develop this industry and technology continues to improve, that blend rate is just going to get higher and higher. So if it's 50% today, we could see that being 60, 70, 80% down the line. And we're working with the Boeings and the Airbuses on the aircraft side. We're working with Rolls-Royce and Pratt, Whitney, and GE and engine manufacturers on their side as well to try and get that blend rate up. As we get the blend rate higher, those economic development opportunities also increase last year, increase as well. And actually, just last year, our partner Virgin Atlantic operated a successful test flight from London to New York that was 100% SAF and worked well, and we're learning a lot of great data from there.
Mr. Davidman, who goes on these test flights?
Well, not me, Mr. Chair. Okay. And it's mostly employees of Virgin Atlantic were on this
one.
Ooh. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go test
So Mr. although Davis. The industry and the technology are still being developed, we know that Minnesota is home to many of the feedstocks that can be used to make SAF, including used cooking oil, corn, soybeans, cover crops such as camelina, which is actually what we used for our first flight out of MSP in September, homegrown camelina from Minnesota, municipal solid waste, forestry waste, clean hydrogen, and more. The problem is that at present, there just isn't enough annual production of SAF to fuel the world's airlines for even 1 week, and what does exist is expensive. The U.S. airline industry alone uses about 30 billion gallons of conventional jet fuel every year, and as an industry, we've made a commitment to replace 10% of that by 2030 with SAF. So that's about 3 billion gallons. But in 2024, worldwide, only 370 million gallons of SAF was made. So we need to get to 3 billion gallons just in the U.S. by the end of the decade. Only 370 million gallons worldwide was produced last year. Our goal at Delta is to make Minnesota and MSP the very first airport where we can say every flight that departs MSP has some level of SAF on board. Thanks to the Minnesota legislature and the bipartisan support and Governor Walz, the state of Minnesota in 2023 passed really a nation and almost worldwide leading SAF tax credit that has put Minnesota in a position to lead in the development of the SAF industry on a global basis. This bill, House File 1669, builds on the work done in 2023 to continue to propel Minnesota as a global leader in building the SAF economy, decarbonize the airline industry while creating significant economic opportunities throughout Minnesota. The SAF tax credit led to the launching of the Minnesota SAF Hub in 2023, which is a first of its kind public-private partnership aimed towards building the value chain to scale SAF, the SAF economy from farm to plane, all right here in Minnesota. And Mr. Chair, if it's okay, I'd love to then pass it to my colleague, Julia Silvas, who's running the Minnesota SAF Hub here in Minnesota.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Julia Silvas. I am the Managing Director of Research and Intelligence at the Greater MSP Partnership, and as Mr. Davidman said, I lead the Minnesota SAF Hub. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. You may be wondering why the Regional Economic Development Organization for the MSP region is working on SAF, and the answer is we see the opportunity to bring tens of thousands of good jobs and billions of dollars of private investment to the state. We also see an opportunity to solve a pressing global challenge, as has been described, from right here in Minnesota. As you've heard, to realize this opportunity, Greater MSP built and launched the Minnesota SAF Hub. It's not its own organization, it's an effort. It's a true public-private partnership with many different entities, many of which you'll hear from today. We have a single ambition and a shared strategy. As you've heard from Mr. Davidman, SAF is a must-have solution for every airline in every country in the world. But no place in the world has figured out how to create a SAF industry at scale. There is a global race underway to be first. You know, Amsterdam is in the running, but I'm excited to say that today we in Minnesota are near the front of that pack. And we want to do SAF right, do it first, and do it big in Minnesota. We are among the global leaders in the SAF race today for several reasons. We've created a smarter, faster problem-solving approach. The partners we have involved are among the industry leaders in the world. And Minnesota is a great place to build a SAF economy because of our many assets, including a large airport with over 400 million gallons of annual fuel demand, robust corporate community that is committed to help us build a SAF industry as well as purchase SAF, deep research assets in our universities, and the availability of many different inputs to make SAF, and you'll hear more about that from some of the speakers today. Another absolutely critical reason that we are leaders is that in 2023, the legislature acted to create the nation's best tax incentive for blending and producing SAF in the state. That action came at exactly the right moment, and without that, I don't believe we would be here today. We submitted a summary of our work in 2024 for your reference that you can review, but today I want to talk about the opportunity that is ahead of us. To put some numbers to the economic opportunity that we see, we recently conducted an independent analysis of building three different SAF biorefineries in the state. Construction of these facilities would generate approximately 55,000 construction job years. In the first 10 years of operations, these facilities would create an estimated 40,000 full-time jobs operating the facilities as well as supplying them with the inputs they need. Also, in those first 10 years, these facilities would cut carbon emissions by roughly 15.5 million metric tons. These are all preliminary but conservative estimates, and the numbers could more than double because we see an opportunity to build more than three facilities in various parts of the state. And you'll see, it's very conceptual, but you'll see a conceptual map in the packet we submitted on slide two. Right now, my colleagues and I at Greater MSP and within the SAF Hub are working with over 15 potential SAF producers from around the country and the world. These companies are considering investing billions of dollars in Minnesota. We are in these conversations because the SAF Hub is made up of the amazing committed organizations and leaders and because of the supportive policy environment that the state has created. Thank you for your attention to the significant economic opportunity, and I'll welcome questions whenever that's convenient.
Any questions for members for you, the testifiers? Thank you. If not, we will move on to Rick King, the chair of the Metropolitan Airports Commission. Please state your name and who represents for the record, please, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Davids and members. My name is Rick King. I'm the chair of the Metropolitan Airports Commission, or the MAC as it's known. I would like to start by extending our gratitude for the 2023 SAF tax credit bill, which you all passed. At that time, there was a great bipartisan support, and we're glad to see the same is true today with House File 1669 as amended. Appreciate the opportunity to express the strong support that MAC has for this bill. Our purpose at MAC is to provide exceptional airport experiences so Minnesota thrives. Our focus is not only on helping provide safe, efficient air travel experiences, but also on being a valuable contributor to the state's economic growth and quality of life. As we look to increase the sustainability of MAC, of MSP airport operations, we're excited about the opportunities presented by sustainable aviation fuel, or SAF. This next generation fuel has great potential for reducing carbon emissions for the nearly 40 million travelers that go through MSP each year. SAF also promises to help generate new economic opportunities for our state and our region, particularly for the agriculture sector. The MSP Airport is number one in many areas, including passenger experience and efficiency, and we're honored to be on a team making the state of Minnesota number one in SAF production. Large-scale availability of SAF would help the MAC advance through the Airport Carbon Accreditation Program and become a leader among North American airports. Supporting airlines in reducing of greenhouse gas emissions from aircraft landings and takeoff cycles is a critical part of the MAC sustainability approach, and this is the largest source of emissions at MSP Airport. Importantly, I'll emphasize this point, we believe that the availability of SAF will be a growing consideration for airlines when they make their decisions about new routes and air service, especially for airlines like Delta with their own ambitious carbon emission reduction goals. So this is going to become more and more of a recruitment thing for airports around the world. With the right investment and planning, we can ensure that MSP and Minnesota are seen as top-tier options as we work to bring in competitive air service for the traveling public. There is still more work to be done, but we accomplished a lot in the first years of the Minnesota SAF Hub. We look forward to continuing the momentum, and this bill will help with that. It will also help us continue to provide exceptional airport experiences so Minnesota thrives. Thank you for the time, and I urge your support of House File 1669. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. King. Any questions for members? Okay, then we'll go to Amanda Bielak. And then on deck, Ann Schwagerl. Schwagerl. What are we having to Smiths and Joneses? What? Did I miss somebody?
Oh, actually, she's going to be virtual.
She's what?
She's going to be virtual. So we'll wait for her.
Okay, okay. I'll put her down the bottom. So is this Amanda?
Yes.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Great. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Amanda Bellick. I am the Senior Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Corn Growers Association. MCGA represents nearly 7,000 family farms that grow corn. Testifying today in favor of House File 1669, thank you, Chair Davids, and to all the co-authors for bringing this bill forward to help to support Minnesota's tax credit aimed at spurring a sustainable aviation fuel development hub in Minnesota. So SAF, as you've already heard, can be produced from many feedstocks, and that includes corn. Corn-based ethanol is a really good fit for SAF production, given its affordability, abundance, and existing infrastructure that's really found all across greater Minnesota communities. To meet the airline's SAF goals, which they have set for themselves, different technology pathways and feedstocks will be needed, and corn has a role to play. We are optimistic that the corn ethanol to SAF production could be a new value-added market for corn. The efficiency of corn production increases by about 2.2 bushels per acre each year due to improved agronomics. Given the improved efficiency of corn production, meeting any new market demand from SAF could come from the existing acres that are already growing in Minnesota. Another factor in corn utilization is the potential decreased demand in existing uses of corn, such as liquid fuel consumption or exports. So the domestic production potential of SAF could provide an avenue to help Minnesota corn farmers with a longer-term corn market demand challenge, while also contributing to the economic vitality of rural communities. Minnesota Corn is a part of the Minnesota SAF Hub, along with lots of other organizations, and we really support the mission in creating that scalable model for SAF here in Minnesota. The initial establishment of SAF production does require some significant capital investment, and state and federal tax credits have a role to play in the overall financing package. And as you've already heard, the Minnesota SAF tax credit, as well as a federal tax credit, do have carbon intensity reduction requirements for eligibility. And any agricultural feedstock for SAF is only one part of the overall life cycle carbon intensity score, but those carbon reductions that can be found in corn can help to lower that overall CI of the finished fuel product. At the Minnesota Corn Growers Association, we've been working with corn farmer leaders to fill some of these data gaps that exist to really help to quantify the efficient production of modern agriculture practices. We worked with a third party to evaluate soil, water, and carbon impacts of crop production practices currently in Minnesota. In 2023, we assessed nearly 39,000 acres, and these are acres that are farmed by the board members of Minnesota Corn. As an additional step, the consultant that we worked with took that farm-level data and then put it through the U.S. Department of Energy GREET model feedstock carbon intensity calculator. So it was found that when you use this real-world data and replace it with some of the default values that are in the model, that corn acres in the assessment really helped to reduce, through those feedstock production practices, reduce the carbon intensity by about 31% compared to those average values that were in the model. So these reductions were driven by efficient fertilizer applications and the use of manure as a source of nitrogen. So the assessment shows that when you use real-world farm-level data of the current production practices, corn can be a valuable, low-cost, and abundant feedstock for SAF. As I mentioned, we're encouraged by this potential market opportunity and look forward to working with partners to address some of the challenges and really working to try and get it right here in Minnesota. So thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1669 and to share the perspective of Minnesota corn farmers on this potential new opportunity for Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? If not, we will then go to Mitch Hunter and then a Hunter Peterson. So Mitch Hunter, if you please join us here. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Chair Davids and members of the committee, my name is Mitch Hunter. I'm the co-director of the Forever Green Initiative at the University of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of HF 1669 as amended. Forever Green develops and commercializes winter hardy annual and perennial crops to help farmers keep the soil covered all year round, which we call continuous living cover. This can deliver a wide range of environmental benefits while also giving farmers new sources of income. We advance this work with a unique approach that combines comprehensive R&D with support for farmer adoption, market development, and partnerships with farm groups, NGOs, businesses, agencies, and more. Two of our leading crops, winter camelina and domesticated pennycress, have high potential to be used as feedstocks for SAF, among many other potential end uses, including animal feed, bioplastics, and plant-based protein. Both camelina and pennycress are winter-hardy crops in the mustard family. They can be planted in the fall after harvest of crops like spring wheat or corn silage, then harvested early the next summer. By relay planting or double cropping, farmers can grow a second crop in that same year, such as soybeans or dry beans. We believe that these crops could eventually be grown over millions of acres in Minnesota. By growing over the winter, these crops provide a wide range of environmental benefits. First, they cover the soil and sharply reduce erosion and nutrient loss. Second, they flower early in the season, providing sorely needed resources for pollinators and other wildlife. And third, the oil from these crops has a very low carbon intensity. There are two main reasons for this. Camelina and pennycress require limited fertilizer and other inputs, and they also create minimal, what's called indirect or induced land use change, because they are primarily grown in the off season of fall, winter, and spring. Now, while estimates of their carbon intensity do vary, the International Civil Aviation Organization estimates that camelina's CI score is 28.6, which is well below the 50% reduction threshold. Our R&D teams are working to further reduce that CI score through improved breeding and management. State investment in Forevergreen's R&D and commercialization activities has led to a strong partnership with Cargill, private sector investment, on-farm piloting, and the first ever SAF-powered flight out of MSP Airport using winter camelina. This bill would help sustain private sector interest and accelerate development of camelina and pennycress. So in sum, these feedstocks can provide a highly scalable, homegrown source of SAF, a new revenue stream for farmers, and a powerful tool to sustain soil health and water quality in Minnesota. And we hope that all SAF feedstocks will be managed in a way that enhances stewardship of Minnesota's soil, water, and wildlife. Thank you, Chair Davids, for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Mr. Hunter, for the work that you're doing and the time that you're taking to tell us a little bit about your research. I'm wondering if you can talk about or maybe even compare the various CI scores for other things like maybe switchgrass, and I know like we will probably hear about like soybean and corn today, and why that is important to keep in mind when thinking about what we use to make SAF.
Mr. Hunter. Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the question. So in general, the importance of the CI score is we want to be deploying SAF in a way that does the most to slow down climate change. So lower is better, and that's better for climate change. And conveniently, in the way that the markets are set up, lower CI is better economically as well. So you know, companies like Delta Airlines are incentivized to reduce their CI as much as possible, so lower CI fuels are more valuable in the marketplace.
Representative Lee? Oh, I'm sorry, were you done?
Well, I think there was the first part of the question that I was going to come back to.
Oh, Mr. Hunter, sorry.
I don't actually know the CI of switchgrass in particular, and you know, there's a very long list of potential feedstocks. There was recently an update to the GREET, the federal GREET model, which estimates the CI for a number of feedstocks. Unfortunately, in the case of camelina, we feel like that update was fairly inaccurate and also not sensitive to differences among management practices and regions of the country. So it's a work in progress. But I would just, I guess, refer you to resources like the GREET report, as well as the International Civil Aviation Organization, which has its own estimate of CI scores for different feedstocks.
Representative Lee.
Good, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Hunter, we'll now go to Hunter Peterson and then Joe Smentek. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Hunter Peterson, and I serve as the Public Policy Specialist at Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. We were founded in 1919. We're a grassroots general farm organization. Minnesota's largest, with over 31,000 family, farm, and ranch members. Thank you for the opportunity today to testify in support of House File 1669 as amended. Minnesota Farm Bureau supports tax incentives to encourage the production and use of renewable fuels such as sustainable aviation fuel. As has been stated and will be stated again, I'm sure, Minnesota has a long history as a leader in renewable fuels, and the SAF tax credit in this bill will continue that. SAF provides a promising market for the crops and feedstocks that our farmers produce right here in Minnesota, and scaling and expanding SAF production has strong potential to foster additional demand for these commodities, strengthening farm income and rural economies. In our view, this tax credit in today's bill represents a natural extension of our state's commitment to fostering agricultural innovation while ensuring economic viability for our farmers. So thank you, Mr. Chair, to you and your bipartisan co-authors for your leadership on this issue. Understand the bill will be laid over for future consideration, but as you're putting together your omnibus bill, I ask for your support. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Okay, let's go. Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson. We'll go to Joe Smentek and then Brian Werner. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe Smentek. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association. Here today to speak in support of the bill as amended. I definitely think this is a good opportunity for our state's agricultural industry as a whole. As we've heard, you know, there's multiple different feedstocks that could be used, and actually all of them will be crucial if we're actually going to reach the goals of that SAF, you know, to have the volumes that we need. We'll have to use all of the ethanol, soybean oil, camelina, pennycress, everything that we will have available, which thankfully in Minnesota, wood forest products too. Thankfully in Minnesota, we have an abundance of feedstocks. And this bill actually hopefully will send the right market signals that we don't want to at least just grow these crops, but we also want to produce them as well. We heard Delta speak about how they did use a flight using the pennycress and camelina. Unfortunately, they had to send that out of state to get crushed and produced. It'd be great if we could grow that here, process that here, and make that fuel here to further reduce the carbon intensity of those crops. I do appreciate the neutrality of this bill, not picking winners and losers in the feedstocks. We've heard some discussion already about how some feedstocks have a lower CI than others, and that really is due to the complexity of the GREET model. Soybean, just like pennycress and camelina, especially in Minnesota, we do have some serious concerns about how that model was created and how soybean oil is treated, especially when you look at a state like Minnesota that, according to the USDA, we have lost cropland since the 1970s. We have not gained new cropland. But the soybean crop, the corn crop in the state, pays the entire cost of that indirect land use change. So pennycress camelina as a cover crop kind of gets a free ride off the backs of whatever the other crop that was grown there. So the neutrality of this bill and not picking winners and losers is really one of the things that we appreciate greatly, and we're happy to support this bill and hopefully can set the right market signals and grow the SAF industry in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Smentek? Really appreciate your time. Let's go to Brian Werner, and then on deck, Rick Horton.
Chair David.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Chair Davids and members of the committee, my name is Brian Werner. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Biofuels Association. On behalf of our 10 ethanol producer members, I appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 1669. The ethanol to jet pathway is both a near-term solution and a springboard for longer-term development of a statewide SAF industry. It has been identified by the Federal Department of Energy as one of the most prominent pathways to likely achieve significant SAF volumes by 2030. In 2023, you all enacted a nation-leading tax credit of $1.50 per gallon for SAF produced or blended in Minnesota. That was a great start, but we know that there's more work to do and more investment that needs to be made to develop this nascent industry. To successfully build a SAF supply chain in Minnesota, farmers and renewable fuel producers will need effective, durable, and long-term incentives. As we see more and more uncertainty on federal tax and trade policy, increasing and extending the allocation in the state SAF tax credit will help provide much-needed confidence for businesses looking to invest and farmers looking for new markets. As this bill moves forward, we also ask that you keep in mind complementary policies like permitting efficiency. Prospective SAF producers that want to utilize this tax credit will also need timeline certainty for permits to construct facilities, install low and zero carbon technologies, and bring production online. Again, we support House File 1669 because it will help spur the development of a SAF industry in Minnesota, which will unlock robust market opportunities for farmers and rural communities while providing for significant greenhouse gas mitigation. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Werner. Any questions for Mr. Werner? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. We'll go now to Rick Horton, and then on deck is Christy LaForest. Now, Mr. Horton, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Rick Horton. I'm the Executive Vice President of Minnesota Forest Industries. We're a trade association representing the large wood consuming in the mills in the state. So think about the paper producers, the people make telephone poles and pallets and that sort of thing. We support House File 1669 as amended as well. We can fly airplanes with wood. You've heard a lot from the ag community, but we also have the technology to make SAF out of wood and wood waste. And creating an infrastructure and this incentive to do so is going to be very valuable in getting the SAF market going here in the state. It would be very beneficial for our forests, actually, and helpful for the loggers and the forest products industry, and it will help reduce carbon emissions in the transportation sector. You know, trees are really just big carbon vacuums. They absorb CO2 out of the air and, using nothing but sunlight and water, turn it into wood products that all of us use every single day. That carbon, we talk a lot about carbon nowadays, that carbon would be released when that tree dies, and they all eventually die. When they die, either by burning up or decomposing, they do release carbon back into the atmosphere where it's sucked back up by other trees. And collectively, the forest absorbs far more carbon than is emitted, making the forest sector the only one that is truly carbon negative. In fact, Minnesota forests absorb 15% of the carbon that's emitted from all sources, industrial, agricultural, transportation, and all of that. And wood is renewable and sustainable. There's an abundance of residual material left in the wood sector. We've got leftover material at the mills, sawdust, bark, things like that. When a tree is harvested, we use the round part of the tree. The limbs are often left on the site and just left there to rot down. Also, we have a lot of dead material from natural disturbances. Currently, we have 700,000 acres of dead and dying balsam fir and spruce from a spruce budworm epidemic. We have emerald ash borer creeping ever northward. It's already killed a lot of the trees here in the metro area. Those have gone to district energy and used to create electricity and steam. We have an eastern larch beetle that's killed 1 million acres of tamarack. All of that material that doesn't have markets could be used to generate SAF. Some folks worry about how much, you know, we don't want to take everything out of the forest because that does have some value. So we do have site level guidelines in place that tell us we have to leave a certain amount based on the type of soil that we're dealing with. And that is there to protect the soil, prevent erosion, provide wildlife habitat. Those guidelines are already in place. We've been doing this for a number of years for electricity generation. Most of our members and a lot of the public agencies are enrolled in forest certification programs, too, that set site-level standards and guidelines about how to manage forests to make sure they're sustainable ecologically, economically, and socially. And we also have very highly trained logging workforce. They follow those standards really, really well. The demand for SAF is high now and growing exponentially as airlines like Delta work to reduce their carbon footprint. And as has been said, meeting that demand is going to require all hands on deck. I'm excited to see what we can do with wood, because wood fiber does offer the greatest opportunity to reduce CI scores. The CI score of diesel or jet fuel made out of wood is less than 10. So that sliding scale in the DE amendment is very critical to development in our sector, because we can achieve very low CI scores and generate a higher tax credit with that. So there are, you know, we do have some concerns and there are some barriers. We are the fifth biggest industry in the state. We employ about 71,000 workers across the state, $25 billion gross sales and $10 billion in value added in the state. We don't want to mess up existing industry to create a new industry. So we still want to see the bole of the tree go to its highest and best use. Again, telephone poles, pallets, paper, that sort of thing. And so the technology exists, but it needs to be scaled up now to meet its true potential. In the short term, there's a byproduct of the paper-making process called black liquor. It's the lignin of the tree. It's a waste material. The paper mills burn it to generate heat and electricity at the mill site, which helps make them sustainable. But when there's excess, it's a hydrocarbon soup that can be readily, you know, converted into SAF. So I think that's our kind of our short vision. The long vision is actually generating the technology to just take wood and turn it directly into SAF and SAF products. And technology exists. It's a global, and everybody's working on this around the world. So we think this incentive is going to ensure that we do the development here in Minnesota. So with that, I'd like to thank you all for your attention today. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Horton? Thank you for your testimony. We'll now go to Christy LaForce and then Darren Borton. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. Christopher D. LaForest here on behalf of the Minnesota Building Instruction Trades Council and the Minnesota Pipe Trades Association today, combined representing over 70,000 skilled trades professionals across the state. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we enthusiastically support this bill because it supports the core mission of the construction trades here at the Capitol, and it's a simple but powerful one, and that's good career-sustaining, family-sustaining jobs for our members. We're excited about this, as I'm sure the committee knows. Recently, just last fall, a project in Moorhead was announced, 193 million gallons annually, which for us, we count in terms of work hours. Many, many hundreds of thousands of work hours will be wrapped up not only in constructing that facility, but in ongoing maintenance and retrofitting throughout the years. I'm sure you've also heard in the presentation that there's a vision to turn Minnesota into a SAF hub. Even if that vision partially comes to fruition, we calculate we're talking upwards of 50,000 jobs for our members. Again, we talk about it in terms of work hours. You're talking about many hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of work hours for our members, and we're really excited about that. Moreover, we'd mention that in the Moorhead facility, it's nice to see a large-scale industrial project on the right side of the Red River, as we would like to think about it. So for those many reasons, we're very enthusiastic about this bill and would respectfully urge the committee's support. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. D. LaForest? Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll go to Darren Porton and then Carolyn Berninger. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Darren Broughton. I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota AgriGrowth. We are a coalition of more than 150 farm organizations, agribusiness, and companies across the great state of Minnesota who are committed to advancing food and agriculture here. I'm here to testify in support of the bill. Minnesota, along with the rest of the United States, is in a great farm recession. On average, net farm income has decreased nearly 25% over the last 2 years, and there is no relief in sight in 2025. Coming out of a great farm recession will not be easy, but there are some things that Minnesota can do in a bipartisan manner to help rebound our ag economy. Sustainable aviation fuel is one of those things. It can boost our ag and greater Minnesota economy. In fact, a recent economic study found that developing a robust, sustainable aviation fuel industry can increase annual farm incomes by more than $11,000. That is $11,000 per farm here in the state of Minnesota. That is money that goes back to Main Street, funding our hardware stores, that goes into our restaurants. That's a real economic benefit. As you heard today, there are at least 15 companies who are interested in building sustainable aviation fuel facilities here in Minnesota. And we also know that we are in a global race for these facilities. In December, Illinois announced that they were building one in downstate. Just 2 weeks ago, Washington State announced new state funding for a proposed aviation fuel facility. We cannot lose out on this important economic development opportunity. Extending this tax credit is common sense. Pairing this tax credit with permitting reform can unleash Minnesota's ag economy potential. And again, I want to state clearly, tax credits and permitting reform are needed to make this industry viable here in the state of Minnesota. Again, AgriGrowth appreciates the bipartisan support on this bill and encourages its passage. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Broughton. Any questions for Mr. Broughton? Okay, thank you very much. We'll now go to Carolyn Berninger, and then we will go, if you flip the page over, go to George Damian. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Carolyn Berninger. I'm a public policy manager at the Great Plains Institute and a facilitator of the Bioeconomy Coalition of Minnesota, testifying today on behalf of the coalition. The Bioeconomy Coalition strongly supports this bill as amended, as it will boost Minnesota's bioeconomy and support decarbonization in the aviation sector. As you've already heard today, SAF is a really critical tool to drive down emissions in the aviation sector, but current production levels are far too low to provide what's needed to meet those goals. Through this bill, Minnesota has an opportunity to both support and benefit from this growing industry. And I also want to underline the importance of state support now at a time when federal incentives are a bit uncertain. So I want to thank you for your time and thank you to Chair Davids for carrying the bill. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Thank you very much. Okay, we'll go to George Damian and then Peter Wagenius would be on deck. And then our last testifier will be Ann Schwergerl. With the Minnesota Farmers Union, so we'll get that hooked up in a little bit here. So please state your name and who represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Chair Davids and committee members. My name is George Damian, and I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Clean Energy Economy Minnesota, also known as SEEM. SEEM is an industry-led, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization representing the business voice of clean energy in Minnesota. Our 70-plus members employ tens of thousands of Minnesotans statewide and are working to decarbonize Minnesota's economy. I'm here today to support House File 1669, Chair David's broadly bipartisan bill to increase the tax credit for sustainable aviation fuel. Aviation accounts for approximately 2.5% of global carbon emissions. SAF is an emerging low-carbon fuel alternative that can significantly reduce life cycle greenhouse gas emissions compared to conventional jet fuel in the aviation sector. Minnesota, with its SAF hub, is uniquely positioned to support the growing SAF economy. The state benefits from the strong market demand, ongoing industry research and development, and a rich supply of feedstocks, such as corn, soybeans, and agricultural and forestry residues, to drive the rising SAF industry's expansion. Increasing the SAF's credit, combined with key permitting reform, will strengthen Minnesota's competitive edge in the biofuel industry while expanding economic opportunities for our state. Moreover, this increase ensures continued growth in the clean fuel sector, where Minnesota is currently the seventh largest producer of biofuels in the nation. In closing, SEEM and our business members like GEVO, which is currently operating a demonstration facility and submitted written testimony today, fully support this proposal to assist emerging technologies that will further decarbonize our economy and lower costs for Minnesotans, all while creating market opportunities and jobs across our state. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Damian. Mr. Peter Wagenius.
Mr. Chair, can you hear me?
Got you. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you. I'm Peter Wagenius from Sierra Club North Star Chapter, one of four organizations who sent committee members with a letter with serious concerns about this bill. SAP can be derived from multiple sources, including wood waste, winter camelina, and corn. It may be that some of these are worth exploring, but for one of them, we already know enough. Using corn for liquid fuel has been a consistent environmental disaster. Therefore, spending more tax dollars on more fuel from corn is throwing good money after bad. If we want to subsidize agriculture for food, let's do so. and not pretend it's good for the environment. Our letter documents not only that corn ethanol has been bad for the climate, but that it causes many other environmental harms, air pollution, water depletion, and more. These harms have damaged habitats and also human health. Nitrates in well water contribute to blue baby syndrome, gastric cancer, and other problems. The EPA had to step in and tell the Walz administration to take action to protect residents from nitrates. The Walz administration is now being sued over it. Minnesota must reckon with these non-climate harms from getting fuel from corn, but they are not included in the GREET model used in the SAF tax credit law. These harms must no longer be considered externalities to be theoretically addressed with other complementary policies. That approach has failed. If you want to pass real guardrails to reduce harms, start with no corn. Moreover, just like with subsidizing data centers, we must ask what funding to services people rely on will be scaled back to give big corn even more subsidies. Voters will compare any funding cuts in this year's budget to this, and they should. Even just within climate emissions, this is not the most effective use. Emissions from aviation are tiny compared with emissions from homes, buildings, and personal transportation. There are so many ways that Minnesota families need state help to reduce their emissions and their energy bills. We must invest to help with air sealing, insulation, upgrading electrical panels, switching out gas appliances to electric, training the next generation of electricians, retrofitting small businesses, public buildings, and more. But we are nowhere near the scale of what is needed to help Minnesota families with their larger emissions. Until we have done that, Delta and United should redirect their profits to incentivize the fuels they need to address their emissions. Families don't have the option to dip into their profits, so subsidies should be reserved for citizens. Make polluters pay is a hallmark principle of environmental progress. With House File 1669, it is the taxpayer who pays. In summary, to the extent that any SAF program or policy encourages more fuels from corn, it is going in the wrong direction. The verdict is already in on that. The verdict is already in on the Walz administration's failure to address the resulting pollution. Let's instead make investments to address the biggest sources of emissions and on things where there is no doubt that they work. Thank you for the opportunity to testify remotely, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Arginius. Any questions for Mr. Arginius? Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Arginius. Let's go to another virtual testifier, Ann Schwergerl, Vice President, Minnesota Farmers Union.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
We can.
Wonderful. Chair Davids and members of the community, thank you for the opportunity to be here with you virtually today. For the record, my name is Ann Schwegel, and I am here on behalf of Minnesota Farmers Union to support House File 1669. I am a farmer from Big Stone County in Browns Valley, Minnesota. We run a diversified grain farm where we raise corn, soybeans, wheat, and a new winter oil seed, winter camelina. We now farm 585 acres of land that we own and rent, and we still feel small for this type of production in our area of the state. So we're always looking for ways to stay competitive and be creative on our land. I'm also honored to serve as the Vice President of Minnesota Farmers Union, a grassroots, membership-driven organization that has represented family farmers like myself since we were founded in 1918. To add to this conversation, I want to talk about why, as a grain farmer who's still relatively new in my career, I'm excited about sustainable aviation fuel, and in particular, what it could mean for our farm. I'll start by talking about our work growing winter camelina, a crop being developed by the University of Minnesota Forever Green Initiative. We plant this winter oil seed in the fall after we harvest our other crops, and this is important to us for two reasons. First, this crop allows us to keep our soil continuously covered throughout the year, protecting our soil from wind and water erosion over our harsh Minnesota winters. We don't want to lose our soil, and a third crop, or traditional cover crops, which we also imply, helps to keep our soil in place. Second, this is another crop that we can market to help our farm cash flow and support our family. The camelina on my farm is crushed, and the oil from it is refined and used locally at Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport as a drop-in replacement for petroleum-based jet fuels. I feel like this is a win-win-win opportunity. We've got a new market and are improving our farm, we're protecting our environment, and we're helping to lower the carbon intensity of a difficult-to-decarbonize sector of the transportation industry. Beyond Winter Camelina, we're continually looking for and experimenting with other ways to increase efficiency and lower the carbon intensity of the other cash crops that we grow, utilizing low or no-till production, cover crops, and precision agriculture practices like gridding and variable rate application of fertilizers. It is my hope that a growing market for SAF will help us continue to reduce our farm's impact on the environment while also seeing some market return for that work. To close, thank you for the opportunity to testify remotely today. I'm in Morris for a advisory committee meeting of the University of Minnesota West Central Research and Outreach Center. And one of the projects we're excited to partner with the team here is on the development of regional farmer-owned production of green fertilizer produced using renewable energy. This is relevant because it's another example of an opportunity that could be accelerated through the SAF market in Minnesota. As with any opportunity, the devil is in the details, and we're confident that Minnesota can get those details right. Thank you, Chair Davids, for your leadership on this bill and for the opportunity to testify today.
And thank you for your testimony. Any questions for members of the testifier? Okay, thank you very much. Anyone else from the audience like to testify for the bill or with concerns on the bill? And we've already heard the department weigh in very nicely, in my opinion, on supporting the bill. So with that, it'd be my intent to go to member questions for the rest of, we don't have to use up the next half hour, but any questions from members? And then I'd like to be able to get this laid over today, because if you look at next week's agenda, we have a lot of DFL bills, a lot of Republican bills that I'd like to get to next week. So Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering if, I don't know who can answer this question, but one of the testifiers referred to a fuel farm out at MSP. Maybe it's the MAC chair. What my question simply is, Mr. Chair, is this the only fuel that's offered? Is the fuel farm Delta referred to their own? I'm just curious because I don't believe all aviation engines can fly on this fuel. Can someone help me with that one?
Yes, I think that was Mr. King, wasn't it? Yeah, okay, he's coming right up here. Did you hear the Hewitt question?
I did, Mr. Chair.
Okay. If you could please identify yourself for the record.
Rick King, Chair of the Metropolitan Airports Commission. Thank you for the question. The fuel farm is a consortium that is owned by the airlines and governed by the federal limits on that kind of transport of fuel. So the fuel comes underground from the refineries to the fuel farm, and then it's dispensed to the airlines, and they do a good job with the environmental regulations, the safety regulations, with all that, and MAC is one of the partners in that consortium. Relative to this particular bill, SAF becomes a drop into that at any place in that system where it then is naturally mixed with the Jet A, and as it is delivered to the aircraft through the underground piping underneath the runways and taxiways, the fuel mix is made. So increasingly, as you add more SAF in, you have more percentage of fuel mixture in there containing SAF.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I heard you right, so it's not mixed at the refineries, it's mixed at the airport itself with other fuel, is that right?
Mr. King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, it doesn't mean that it couldn't be mixed at the refinery. If it were, in my opinion, it would be something where the refinery is actually making the SAF at the same place they're refining the Jet A, and then they could mix it and deliver it. The delivery points could be anywhere in that system from the refinery. From a different refinery, perhaps at some point there'd be different types of pipelines that would deliver that fuel into the fuel farm.
Representative Hewitt.
And Mr. Chair, thank you for indulging me here for a moment. So right now this is not made in Minnesota. It's also being trucked in or pipelined into the airport. Is that right? Because there are planes now flying on this in Minnesota. Is that correct? So
How is it getting to Minnesota if it's not made here right now?
I'm going to phone a friend for that one, Mr. Chair.
We'll bring up Mr. Davidman here. And did I mention I love Delta Airlines? That was my grandniece, just so you know. Throw her under the bus, I guess.
Mr. Chair, I'm just going to keep coming up if I get to hear that. So that's great. Okay. So, Mr. Chair, again, for the record, my name is Jeff Davidman with Delta Airlines, and thank you for the question. So we only have brought staff to MSP for that initial test flight. So on that day, we did bring it in by truck. And it had it was blended before it got there, brought in by truck, entered in the fuel farm, into the tanks that only dispense the jet fuel. So I think there was a question about, you know, what if there's a plane that doesn't use jet fuel but maybe uses avgas or something else? So the tanks that it went into is just with the jet fuel, because once it's blended with jet fuel, the ASTMs is certified exactly the same. The planes view it the same. So it can be used, a blended SAF and jet can be used with jet as well. I'm not sure how, because we only use the jet, but if you're at the FBO and you're using avgas, that comes from a different source, so it wouldn't be used there. The vision for us going forward would be produced in Minnesota, blended in Minnesota, and brought in as through the system. But we don't have it coming quite yet on a regular basis. We're looking to have a blending facility hopefully up and running by the end of this year.
Representative Hewitt.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, I'm not a million mile member probably like you, but I'm working on it.
Hey, I'll tell you what. I'm silver medallion. My wife, yeah, I'm that low. My wife is, platinum. But when I get to travel with her, I get to take advantage of my wife. That didn't sound right. Considering the flight status, what I'm talking about here. Okay. Never take advantage of your wife. Bad form. Okay, we'll go to Representative Hewitt. Were you finished?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I don't know if this is working. I think my question is more for nonpartisan. I just want to understand how the credit is working. And maybe first to our testifier from Delta. So I've heard about a facility in Clay County, a facility in Moorhead. Are they production facilities? Are they blending facilities? Are they both? Because the credit, you can only use it for one or the other. So can you just walk me through how that's going to look?
Yeah. Mr. Davidman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I appreciate the question. So the DG Fuels facility that you heard about in Moorhead is going to be a production facility in place, and so would get the production credit, and that's really the focus that we're looking for. You know, from the credit standpoint, it's really to scale the creation and the production of SAF. At the same time, we are hoping to be able to bring it to MSP as soon as we can. We don't have a facility up and running, so we're looking to also get a blending facility put in place as well. That won't be in the Moorhead facility per se. But it would be closer to the airport. So it's similar to what the federal credit was, which is it could be either a blender or a producer, but it can't be both. You can't count it twice.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you for that answer. And then what is the Clay County facility about?
Mr. Davidman.
It's the same. I believe it's the same. Yeah, it's the Clay. Same. Yeah, so it's the DG okay. Fuels facility.
Got it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yep. So we're talking about really one big production facility.
It's currently, Mr. Chair and Representative, so currently one has been announced. The Minnesota SAF Hub, Julia Silva, spoke to, they're in conversations now with 15 other potential organizations that are looking to invest in Minnesota. The vision for the SAF Hub is somewhere between 3 to 5 facilities, production facilities in Minnesota, spread out through the state using a variety of feedstocks, as was referenced before. You know, this is not an either or an or, it's really an all the above strategy of whether it's corn or soy or camelina or woody biomass or municipal solid waste or clean hydrogen, and the list can go on and on. So that's the vision.
President Robbins.
Thank you. Switching to Ms. Templin. when I look at the fiscal note, could you just help me understand, because maybe I'm misunderstanding it, at the end, it says the credit allocation for all years is increased from $11.6 million to $39 million for a total impact of $27.4 million. So this is just a capped credit, and we're deciding that's the amount. Am I understanding that correctly?
Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Robbins, that is correct. This tax credit is not a forecasted tax credit. It is a tax credit that is allocated based on a capped amount in legislation. And the amounts that you see, there's no fiscal impact in fiscal 26, but there is an impact in fiscal 27. Part of the reason why the fiscal impact is so high in fiscal 27 is because there is, the bill allows a carryover credit. So there's an existing carryover credit in fiscal 25 that would be carry over into fiscal 26 and 27. And the department is assuming a fiscal impact will start in fiscal 27 because the first claims for the SAF production will occur in late 2025. The allocation in the language of the bill is at a higher amount in the first couple of years, but the allocation does continue until fiscal year 2035 at the $2.1 million. And again, that is a capped allocation. However, even though it is capped, the amount of the tax credit used is based on the production of SAF. And so if the production exceeds the capped amount, obviously there's no additional fiscal impact to the state.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. Very helpful. Appreciate it. So my last question, if you don't mind, sir, is your testifier mentioned that Amsterdam's in line for this and that, you know, that there's sort of a race because there are barriers to making this viable. So could you talk more generally about, aside from maybe needing the tax incentive, what are the other barriers to really making this work?
Mr. Daverman.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative, I do appreciate the question. So the whole world is looking to try and scale this industry. So you're right, there's a race for that. It's really exciting about the work that we've started here in Minnesota. I would say, the biggest, as we're looking at the biggest challenges, it would be the ability to get the production facilities, those that have been announced or are being looked at, off of the drawing board and into the ground and being built. Because we do believe once we can scale the industry, it's a product that we know the end consumer, whether it's Delta or the other airlines, wants to purchase. It's newer technology that that needs to get developed and built. And so the biggest challenge that we're seeing is making sure the producers are able to get the projects that they're announcing off the planning board and shovels in the ground and built. And so we're excited about some of the opportunities that we see here in Minnesota and the interest of Minnesota to be able to make that a reality.
Thank you. One more, Mr. Robbins. Chair. Thank you. So is the barrier to that like permitting to get them shovel ready?
So
Mr. Daverman?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative, appreciate the question. As you've heard today from other testifiers, and permitting is a component of it to be able to get them built in the ground, getting the financing as well to be able to build it as well. So, you know, we're excited in the SAF Hub. We have an organization like Bank of America partnering with us to help give us guidance on what's needed in order to get the industry financed and invested in. But yes, I would say the permitting is a piece of it, and then the financing as well.
Representative Robbins. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Davids. I don't really have a question. I have a comment, I think, because I think I'm the only farmer on this committee, if I'm not correct. So growing corn, and so is there any doubt that I wouldn't support this bill? Is there any doubt? And I just read the bill today, and Chair Davids, I did add my name to the bill. I just appreciate bills that support Minnesota farmers, that allows us to have value-added options, new markets for our products, because that helps not just farmers, but it helps everybody in the state. So, yes, I am in favor of this bill. So thank you, Chair Davids.
Thank you, Representative Harder. And Representative Joy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, again, this is in my district. It creates 650 full-time jobs. I think this is very needed. You know, as we battle between North Dakota and Minnesota, this is a business we're going to bring on this side of the river. This is a win for us. Yes, it comes with a tag, but I think this is a win. So I do appreciate this bill, and I want to see this keep moving forward. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to have Representative Gomez wrap it up if there's no one else. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is interesting because this went in 2023. This was a study that went into conference committee and came back out of the Transportation Conference Committee, a tax credit that this committee didn't discuss that year. I'm wondering, maybe this is a question for nonpartisan. So how much of the original allocation in this effort has been used thus far to date?
Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gomez, the budget page is provided by the governor's staff or the governor's office. The information that we have tells us that there is none of the credits have been used to date, and that the production will start in late 2025.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Templin. So we had a program that we established in 2023 that was a tax credit that wasn't vetted by the tax committee, which is fine, but none of it's been spent yet. And already we're coming back and proposing to add more money to the tax credit. You know, this is, again, we've been talking kind of about, corporate tax expenditures in the tax bill. And this is just interesting to me that we would already be coming back a couple years later to add more money to a pot of money that hasn't been touched yet. I think that it makes sense for us as policymakers to look at how things work before we decide kind of preemptively to put a lot more money into them. I mean, maybe in the grand scheme of things, this is certainly not Representative Wiener, the most expensive bill this committee has seen. Representative Wiener had a $4 billion a year tax bill yesterday for those who were not present, which is probably most people.
Go big or go home.
Go big or go home. That's what they say. But we do have to be judicious. And I think, I appreciate our colleagues on the other side of the aisle, and Representative Robbins in particular, for pointing us toward caring about how the people's money is spent. And I think that needs to apply not only to direct allocations, not only to allocations to nonprofits, not only to our spending on people, on human health and human services, but also to tax credits. Is the testifier still up there? I can't see. I'm sorry. Well, he wasn't there, but he's not up there. But we had this conversation about scaling this.
Chair Gomez, if you'd like, Mr.
Davis. I don't know. I mean, I think I can just refer to the comments. It's fine. We don't need to go through fake lawyer stuff here or anything. But you said the whole world is looking to scale up this industry. Once we can scale this industry, but there's no way to scale this up in the way that it is developing to meet the needs of the aviation sector in a meaningful way. This industry it requires really extensive subsidy by the public, and we just have to analyze whether, it makes sense for us to bring really significant public subsidy, because it's not just state subsidy that sustainable aviation fuel gets. There are significant federal subsidies related to this. What that means is that this kind of effort doesn't sustain itself. It doesn't pay for itself. It can't, we talk about a free market. It's like the market isn't quite there. It isn't working. And when we're being asked as policymakers to intervene in the market on behalf of companies, basically, to hand dollars over to companies, it's like we have to really analyze what it is that our money's getting us. Obviously, one needs to only look at the authorship on this bill to understand the political realities that are in front of us on this one. And obviously it's a priority of the governor, but I appreciate the issues that have been surfaced around, you know, how much sense does it make to use a high input crop that would otherwise be used for food for this? How does that math kind of, how does it all pencil out both economically and environmentally? So those are the questions in front of us as we move this forward. I think that we have to kind of take a look at, obviously, you know, I appreciate the development of the winter cover crops. The oil crops in particular are good for this. They have really major environmental benefits to our soil, and, you know, making sure that our soil exists long term is in all of our interests. But there's a question about the match between, you know, our ability to kind of meet again, to bring this to scale with that kind of crop. Because my understanding is it's not possible. And so, you know, there are major externalities associated with an effort like this. There are impacts on, again, soil health, water health, and obviously our kind of what our climate future will be like, and in addition to the economic implications for our budget. So, we'll be talking about this going forward, I suspect. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Chair Gomez, and I'd like to set the record straight on something here, too. I was kind of going down the wrong road because I was so excited that you carried this in the 2023 tax bill. Then I find out you didn't carry this in 2025 tax bill, came out of Transportation Committee, which I find a bit odd, I will say, but here we are today.
Can't imagine why they didn't want to bring this through the tax committee in 2023, Mr. Chair. It's a mystery for the ages.
So, but for the record, because I was thinking that you had carried it in 2023, but it was out of the transportation, we just to set the record straight on that.
Yes.
So, okay, with that being said, I will move that House File 1669 be laid over for possible inclusion as amended in the omnibus tax bill. Okay, with that, anything else for the good of the order? Thank you, members, for your work the last couple days here. Well, every day. Representative Herr.
Mr. Chair, just as you were clarifying also, I just wanted to clarify that I am a farmer, proud member of the Farmers Union.
Well, I'm a farmer, too, but this is how political I can get sometimes. I'm a member of the Farmers Union and the Farm Bureau.
Oh.
All the bases covered. All the bases covered. Okay, some bills for next week. Tuesday, we're looking at Robbins 169, Charitable Gaming, another Robbins for Veterans. We've got Bennett, we've got Joaquin for Wednesday, and we have more DFL bills that we are scheduling, so we're getting them on the docket here, too. That's very important. So, what, three farmers in the legislature? Harder, Davids, Herr? Something? Got enough? Oh, Wiener's. Oh, there's another one. Dotseth is a farmer. I know that, but he's not on the committee. Not on the committee. With that, good government all the time. We are adjourned. Thank you, members.